Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Bhaktivedanta ki, Grantha Raja Shriman Bhagavatama ki, Giriraj Maharaja ki, Jaya Nitai Gopremanandi. Okay. So tonight we'll continue the pastime of Bali Maharaj and Vamana Dev. Tonight we'll begin chapter 19. Chapter 19 is a discussion about Bali Maharaj's interaction with Vamana Dev. So we heard in the previous chapters that Aditi performed the Payo Brata bow, and then from that bow, then the son was born, who manifests from Kashyapa to Aditi, that is Vamana. Then Vamana has appeared. Bali Maharaj is offering him gifts, and now tonight he will directly exchange with Vamana Dev. So tonight we'll do from verses 1 to 12, and then we'll continue tomorrow night with chapter 19. Where is everybody? Shukadeva Goswami continued. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vamana Dev, heard Bali Maharaj speaking in this pleasing way, he was very satisfied. But Bali Maharaj had spoken in terms of religious principles. Thus the Lord began to praise him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O King, you are indeed exalted because your present advisers are the Brahmanas who are descendants of Bhrigu. And because your instructor for your future life is your grandfather, the peaceful and venerable Prahlad Maharaj. Your statements are very true, and they completely agree with religious etiquette. They are in keeping with the behavior of your family, and they enhance your reputation. Whatever bundle you want.
Prahlad Maharaj is a vivid example of a pure devotee. Someone might argue that since Prahlad Maharaj, even though very old, was attached to his family, especially to his grandson Bali Maharaj, how could he be an ideal example? Therefore, this verse uses the word prasanta. A devotee is always sober, he is never disturbed by any conditions. Even if a devotee remains in the rest of life, does not renounce material possessions, he should still be understood to be prasanta. So, but because of his pure devotion to the Lord, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that process, Shiva Vipar, Shiva Nyasi, Sutra Vedana, Krishna Sattva Veda, Sail Guru Hai, whether one is Brahmana or Sannyasi or Sutra, regardless of what he is, he can become a spiritual master if he knows the science of Krishna. Anyone completely aware of the science of Krishna, regardless of his status in life, is a guru. Thus, Prahlada Maharaj is a guru in all circumstances. Here, this Lord Sri Bhavana Deva also teaches sannyasis and brahmacharis that one should not ask more than necessary. He wanted only three places of land. Although Bali Maharaja wanted to give him anything he wanted.
Any points?
First, you can see how even Supreme Lord chooses to glorify his devotees and then come to the point. This conversation happening, but straight away, even the Lord is showing example that don't come to the point. So if you think about something, first he starts giving rising.
Anything else?
Ganesh Prabhu was saying that even if devotees are grihastas, but they are grihastha brahmacharis. So it doesn't matter if they are grihastha ashram or brahmachari, they are all equally renounced, and that sannyasi and brahmachari should not look down upon grihastha that engaging in activities of sense gratification.
Anything else?
Self-contempt quality has been satisfied with what you have. So if you have been pure quota, basically what Krishna has given, you satisfy
So it's a nice purport, because Prabhupada is glorifying the equality of the renunciants and the grihasthas. So regardless of which ashram one is in, that is not the most important factor. But the most important factor is one's bhakti, or one's devotion to Krishna. So you'll see there are 12 mahajans, and most of the mahajans are grihasthas. Some of them are renunciates, Narada and Shukadev and maybe several others, but most of them are actually grihasthas. Most of them are chatriyas also. So to be a mahajan, or to be a great devotee, it is not about the external appearance. It is about what is internally within one's heart. So Vamanadev has said to Bali Maharaj, you are exalted. Although you're in the Grihastha ashram, although you are still dealing with worldly things, because Grihastha means you have to deal with worldly things, family and children and possessions and so many things, but still your consciousness is exalted, because actually you're thinking of Krishna. So Prabhupada quotes Kiva Vipra, Kiva Nyasi, Sudrakeninai. So regardless of which position you're in, if your consciousness is on Krishna, then you are considered exalted, or Mahajana. So this is the position of a devotee. We don't judge the devotee according to externals. We don't look at a devotee and say, oh, he is a Grihastha, or he is Sannyasi, or Brahmachari, or Vanaprastha. We look at the devotee and we see, what is the bhakti that this devotee has? What is the qualification? The Atika means the devotion to the Lord. And if someone has great devotion to the Lord, then he's accepted as exalted. And if someone has less devotion, then we see he is not as advanced as the other devotee. But Bali Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, they are all exalted devotees. So we don't see that they are anything less. So Prabhupada elaborates in the purport that Prahlad Maharaj, by this time, because we heard in 7th canto, that Prahlad Maharaj was a child. But by this time, Bali Maharaj has been born, who is the grandson, and Prahlad Maharaj is a grandfather by this time. So he's old. But Prabhupada is pointing out he's still in Grihastha life. He hasn't renounced the home. He's still there. But he's Prahlad Maharaj. So even though he's in Grihastha life, he has grandchildren and palace and so many servants and so many possessions. These people are the lords of the universe. But even though they're in such a position, they don't have attachment. They are still detached. And that is the measure of a devotee. Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Jnaya Yashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayara Hoitukam. If one has bhakti to Krishna, then one will have renunciation. So we see with Prahlad Maharaj, even though he is in a very opulent situation and he's in household life and he's a grandfather, maybe even a great-grandfather, but he is detached. And that is the test of advancement for a devotee. Because if a devotee is advanced, he is detached. If you have bhakti, you have detachment from this world. And that is the test. And we have to see in all of us. Just like I went to Fiji recently and I spoke to one of my godbrothers, because I was thinking, should I get married again or should I not get married again? So I spoke to one of my godbrothers, he's a very advanced devotee. And he said, only you can see what is in your heart. So we have to look what is actually in our heart. What is the actual consciousness of the devotee? Yeah, is detachment real or not? How detached have we become? And until you understand and you're honest with yourself, you can't advance to the next stage in devotional service. Because if you think you're more detached than what you are, then you'll just fall back. If you try to act on a platform you're not on, then you'll just fall back anyway to where you naturally settle. So each one of us has to see how detached have we become. And it takes time to become detached. You can't become detached overnight as a devotee. It takes time to gradually cultivate vairagya, genuine vairagya. If you just go ahead too quickly, and then you think, oh, now I can be a renunciate, but if you're not qualified, you'll just fall back to the position anyway. So Prahlad Maharaj, because he's exalted, even though he's surrounded by so much, but there's no attachment to it. And Prabhupada said also, he speaks about the renunciates in the second paragraph. So he says, one who is renounced in the renounced order of life, they should not ask for more than necessary. So this is what it means to be a brahmachari or a sannyasi. You have to be renounced, detached. You have to have minimal material possessions. Now, grihasthas are not like that. So you have to understand your conditioning. If you can't understand what your conditioning is, if you're not properly situated according to Varna and Ashram, you don't advance in Krishna consciousness. As my spiritual master said many years ago, you only get out of this world when you understand you're in this world. So in other words, if you don't understand what your attachments are, what your position is, what your conditioning is, then you cannot transcend it. As long as we think we are something we're not, then we can't get out of this material world. But when you understand when we understand what our conditioning is, and we practice devotional service from that platform, then we can progress to higher realizations. So a renunciate must be detached. That's the point. Just like recently, we had one brahmachari, a very advanced brahmachari in our movement, Govinda Prabhu. He came here, so I think most of you know who he is. So he travelled here to Melbourne, and he had one little bag like this. You see most Indians when they get on the aeroplanes, you know, they have 30 kilos, 60 kilos. You know. Most people are not so renounced. But he travelled from India to India and just had one little bag. He had one dhoti, one kurta, probably one other dhoti, one kurta.
Two sets, that's all.
Yeah, so he had two sets.
That's all.
Yeah, like that. And japa bag and probably some books or something, and then that's it. That's actually renounced. I can't travel like that. I can't move. I need at least three sets. Otherwise, not possible. So then, even there's one story of one associate of Mahaprabhu. I can't remember which devotee it was, but it might have been one of the Dattas, Vasudev Datta maybe. I can't remember exactly which associate it was, but he came, Lord Chaitanya. Was invited by him for lunch. So he came to lunch with Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya said he wanted a particular item. So a devotee went and brought it from the market, and then he brought it and he gave to Lord Chaitanya. And then, next day, Lord Chaitanya, he said, I want that item. So then he very quickly just went into the next room and gave it to Lord Chaitanya, offered it to Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya said, how did you get it so quickly? And then he said, I brought extra from the market so that if you ask again, I can give it to you. So Lord Chaitanya said, you are hoarding. So he said, you are not a renunciate. You should get married. Because someone who is renounced, they will not keep extra things. So Lord Chaitanya saw the mentality. Just wait. So he saw the mentality of the devotee. So unless we understand what is our consciousness, what is our position, we cannot progress further in devotional service. But if we understand what our conditioning is, how much attachment we have in this material world, then we can progress from that platform. So that is the important thing. So you see here Prahlad Maharaj, he has all the opulence, he has the material situation, but he is not attached to it. Bali Maharaj is the same. So we have to understand what are we within our conditioning, and from our condition platform then we can progress in devotional service. Otherwise, if you don't get properly situated, you may try to progress, but you'll just fall back anyway in due course of time. So. So any points?
It was something for digestion. Rutika takki something takki.
Harry Ducky or something like that.
So should we understand, or should we understand that this self-contentment, this quality, for a grihastha, can we, you know, can vary, or should we understand that to what level of attachment we have, and then from there on to proceed to attain the perfection of this self-contained quality?
So what's the point?
Point of this is a question basically, for a grihastha, this quality is not a mandatory, and is it only for 100% mandatory for brahmacharis and renunciates? And for grihasthas, is it probably a 40-50% degree, and from there on you work on it to achieve the 100% gradually?
You mean renunciation?
Should I understand it that way?
I'm still missing the point though. Were you talking about renunciation, or what are you talking about?
We are talking about grihasthas.
Yeah.
How should I understand basically this point of self-contained quality? Of whatever we need, is that what should be possess?
Yeah, I mean, obviously what you need is what you should possess. If you have
generally
more of
them. That is not the case for grihasthas.
So that's your problem. So what have you got all those things in your house for? If you don't need them, what are they there for? So maybe minimize your possessions then. Or it means that as a grihastha, over time you should see that your possessions are minimized as time goes by. It means if you've got more next year, it means you're going backwards. So gradually over time things should minimize, not increase. Any other point? Okay. I know that even until now, no one taking birth in your family has been poor-minded or miserly. No one has refused to give charity to brahmanas, nor after promising to give charity, has anyone failed to fulfill his promise. So here we're hearing about the qualities of a kshatriya. You'll see that many of the Mahajans are kshatriyas. Who are the 12 Mahajans? Lord Brahma? Right, so Brahma is like a brahmana. But Lord Brahma is also, he has the brahmastra weapon. So, you know, he can act like a kshatriya. He's like a brahmana, but he has powerful weapons also. So Lord Brahma, and then Narada. So Narada he's renounced, right? He's not a grihastha, he's a renunciant. And then Shiva. So Shiva is grihastha, like that. And then we have
Yamaraj.
Yeah, that's later on. But you have Kapila. Kumara is a Manu. So Kapila is a renunciate, Kumara is a renounced, but Manu is a kshatriya. Then you have Janak, Bhishma, Prahlad. So they're all three are kshatriyas, grihasthas and powerful kshatriyas. Right? And then you have Yama, who is also kshatriya and is also grihastha. So you have Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj is also a king. He's a kshatriya, like that. And then you have Yama and Shukadeva. So Shukadeva is renounced. Yama is. So you see that many of the Mahajans are grihasthas. They're also kshatriyas. So kshatriya has a very particular duty. So it says here that if anyone comes to the kshatriya and he begs charity, the kshatriya must give charity to that person. Otherwise he's not qualified as a kshatriya. So it means that one has to maintain others. That's what it means. The qualification of a kshatriya is that he must maintain other people. That is the duty of the government. The government are meant to be made up of kshatriyas. Why? because Chachu is a very high class people. The nature of high class people is they are very selfless. I mean, they're not living for themselves. You see in the modern day, the government, it's not Kshatriya. Right? It's like some Sudra or some Vaishya maybe, like that. So more absorbed in themselves. So you see in the modern governments, people are always getting into trouble. Every time you turn on the news, there's some politician who was keeping money for himself or did some cheating or something like that. But that is not the position of the Kshatriya. The government must be run by Kshatriya, because Kshatriya means they are selfless. So it means they're not worried about themselves. The Kshatriyas are very opulent. Why are they opulent? Because they represent God. They are called Naradeva. Naradev means they're God's representative, God in human form. So the Kshatriya is meant to look after others, protect others. So therefore he is very selfless. And even though he has so much wealth, but they do not use it for themselves. And they consider the wealth is... Usually the Kshatriyas live quite simply, even though they may be in big palaces and everything, but they're very simple-minded. And they always give charity to others. In other words, they make sure everyone is being protected and maintained. So there's no hungry people. And Prabhupada would criticize this. Just like in Australia, we have like maybe 5%, 6% unemployment. And I think in America, it might be closer to 10%, I think. Or 8% or something like that. India, I don't know, what's it like in India? Does India have any figures? Maybe no figures like that. But the point is that everyone should be employed. Everyone should be maintained. The only people who should not be employed in doing something, right, means people who are sick or old or disability or something genuine, then they have to be maintained by the government. So the government's duty is to make sure everyone is maintained and peaceful. Not that they are unemployed. Prabhupada would criticize, this is the defect of the modern government. They're not making sure that everyone has meaningful employment. Because they don't understand what is meaningful employment. And what we see is employment situation in the modern world is unmeaningful. You know, look at most of the jobs you have. Are your jobs necessary for society? Sugadev Prabhu, is your job necessary for society? Yeah, it's not necessary. Yeah, probably not. And you look at most of the jobs that people have these days in Melbourne, most of the jobs are not necessary for society. So because we have these unnecessary jobs, then you also have unemployment. Whereas if we understood how people should actually be engaged, what would be meaningful employment, there would be no unemployment. But the government doesn't understand properly. So Prabhupada would criticize this. The Kshatriya should make sure there is no problems. So everyone should get charity. It means every Kshatriya, he makes sure that everyone in the in his kingdom is given sufficient. And the Kshatriyas are so...
benevolent.
Yeah, benevolent. That they give everything which they have, they give to the citizens. They wear the clothes, and when the clothes become old, they give them to the Shudras. Just to the citizens, they give. So everyone in the Vedic times, just like in Maharaj Yudhisthira's time, in Maharaj Yudhisthira's palace and in his capital, there were so many Kshatriyas in his army. So they would wear their clothes. When the clothes got a little old, they would give them to the Shudras. So all the Shudras were walking around in old clothes which were used by the royalty, which means nice clothes. Now, maybe they're a bit old, but then they got nice things to wear. It even says that when they finished the jagyas, when they did the jagya, they would use golden paraphernalia. The paraphernalia was made from gold. And at the end of the jagya, they would not use it again. They would just give it away to all the Shudras and everything. So even the Shudras in the Vedic times, they were eating off golden plates, which were left over by the Kshatriyas. Or when the Kshatriyas had finished with something, they just give it away. Okay. So this is the position of the chhatra. It means everyone must be maintained, they must be protected, and everyone must be given proper maintenance in society. So this is the duty of the chhatra. So it says here in this verse, everyone who comes to a chhatra, he always gets charity. He never walks away without getting what he wants. And the chhatriyas are famous for giving charity. Just like Karna, he was a powerful chhatriya, following the chhatriya principles. So he was very famous for giving charity. So he would perform his daily puja, but then one time Indra, because Indra was the father of Arjuna, and he wanted to protect Arjuna because he knew in the future there would be a battle between Karna and Arjuna. They were rivals. They were actually brothers, but they were rivals. So Indra, he knew that Karna would always give charity. He was famous for that. So then he came disguised as a Brahmana. And when Karna finished his daily worship, then he would give charity. And Indra came and he begged. He said, "My dear Brahmana, what can I offer to you?" And then he said that, "I want to give you the kavach," which means his earrings and also his armor. He had armor. He was born with armor because he was the son of Vivishwan, the sun god. So then, because he'd been asked for that, he cut the earrings and he cut the armor from his body and he gave it to Indra. And Indra revealed who he was. But still he gave that. Because that is the nature of the chhatriya. He will always maintain. So that is a real chhatriya. As opposed to these days, the politicians, they're not so... not interested in the public to the degree they should be. There's some good politicians. But there's a lot of confusion. Because we don't have real chhatriya. And the other quality which is mentioned in this verse, the chhatriya never walks away from battle. If he is challenged, he must fight. Whereas these days, Prabhupada would criticize the government, they won't go to the battlefield. They'll send all their sudras to the battlefield and get them killed. Just like when America attacked Iraq, so they sent so many soldiers and so many soldiers were killed. So there's one movie producer, his name is Michael Moore. He's American. He makes good films. He made one film called Fahrenheit 9/11. You might have seen that one. He made another one called Bowling for Columbine, won the Academy Award. And he's made one called Sicko. Very good documentaries. If you watch his very good documentaries. So he exposes modern society. So in one of his documentaries, I think it was Fahrenheit 9/11, he was talking about 9/11, how the planes hit the Twin Towers, and then immediately America invaded Iraq, because it was like an excuse to invade. It's a whole story, what happened. So then he went to Washington, and the politicians at lunchtime, they were walking around on the street, you know, going for lunch and everything, and he went up to one of the politicians, and he was giving out like pamphlets, because they send the kids from America, the politicians send the kids to Iraq and they were being killed. Many of them were getting killed in the war. So then he was saying to the politicians, he was handing out things, he's saying, we're thinking of sending your children to Iraq to fight. You know, all the politicians, your sons, we'll send them. And then one politician walks up and then he gave them and he said, "We're thinking of sending your son." And the guy just went, like this. So this is not chhatriya. Chhatriya means everyone else can go and fight and I will sit here comfortably. No. But real chhatriya means he will be the first on the battlefield. You know, in Kurukshetra, right, who was the first on the battlefield? Right, Arjuna, he was in the front of the army. Right? The chhatriya will lead the army. That is chhatriya. Because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, "Happy are chhatriyas for which fighting opportunities come unsought, opening for them a gateway to heaven." So chhatriya means he will be courageous, he will fight like that. So here, Bhagavatam is saying, Vamana Devi is saying, your family is good, you're real chhatriyas. Because you never walk away from a fight. If you're challenged, you always That's chaturi. It means if he's challenged, you were fine. And you always give charity. So you have a very great dynasty. Any points?
One more point adding to it is probably Karna asked for request from Krishna, Lord Krishna, regarding that if at all he is going to give a benediction, he asked for Karna to be died only in the battlefield. He should not die in the camp. He should not be died in the camp. If at all he dies, it should be only in the battlefield.
Any other points? Okay. O King Bali, never in your dynasty has the low-minded king been born who, upon being requested, has refused charity to brahmanas in holy places or a fight to kshatriyas on the battlefield. And your dynasty is even more glorious due to the presence of Prahlad Maharaj, who is like the beautiful moon in the sky. So, Mahatma Prabhu.
We're doing number four.
Yeah, number four.
The symptoms of Kshatriya are given in Bhagavad Gita. One of the qualifications is the willingness to give charity. Dan. A Kshatriya doesn't refuse to give charity when requested by a Brahmana, nor can he refuse to fight another Kshatriya. A king who does refuse to is called low-minded. In the dynasty of Bali Maharaj, there were no such low-minded kings.
Okay, so what are the points?
One is willingness to give charity, other thing to fight. Which you already mentioned.
Yeah. That's a good kshatriya. Any other point?
Kshatriya does not refuse to give charity given request by Brahmana. You're not supposed to give anyone the kshatriya because king means, you know, even the subjects come and ask something.
No, he gives to anyone who asks, then he gives. Anything else?
See, his father is a Brahmana.
Father of Vamanadeva.
Even
Bali.
Yeah,
Kashyap is not his father.
Did he give birth to
Hiranyakashyap? Oh, if you go back, yeah, the great 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 grandfather, not father, the great grandfather.
So, they come really from
the Brahmana
family.
Yeah, but they're kshatriyas. Just because you're born in a particular family doesn't mean you are that particular thing.
Okay.
So, any other point? So, Krishna discusses in the 18th chapter of the Gita, he says that every vana has its particular qualities. So what are the qualities of the kshatriya? Krishna says the first quality is heroism. Heroism means they will perform extraordinary feats. That is a kshatriya. And you look at the powerful kshatriyas, like in the Mahabharata, the Ramayana, in the Bhagavatam, they perform extraordinary feats. So that is how we judge a kshatriya. He can do extraordinary things. Like you see Arjuna, I mean, he's an example of someone who's extraordinary, or Bhishma. There's so many extraordinary activities. So this is the result of a kshatriya, because if he does heroic activities, everyone will have faith in him, in the kingdom. Right? Then you know he can protect you. You know he is powerful. We know that he will lead the army. And just like when the Pandavas were trained, and the Kauravas, they were trained by Dronacharya. And at the end of the training, then Drona, he brought them all back to Hastinapur. And then they built one arena. You know, like now we have the MCG. So they built one bigger arena and everyone came in the kingdom. And then they displayed the martial prowess or ability of the students, of the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra and the 5 Pandavas and others. So then they showed everyone how heroic they were so that the citizens have faith in the Kshatriyas. They can protect us. They have to be heroic. They have to be able to do extraordinary things. So after everyone had done everything, Dronacharya, he got them all the Kshatriyas to do their activities, to do their show their abilities and their skills. Then at the end he said, now Arjuna, you come. So Arjuna came and he did so many things which no one else could do. And then after Arjuna finished, then Karna, he came. He wasn't one of the students, but he just appeared. And then he said, I will do everything that Arjuna did. And then he did everything exactly as Arjuna had done. And then he challenged Arjuna in front of everyone. And he said, I will kill you now in front of everyone. And Arjuna could not step down. So then he said, okay, then we will fight. And then the sun set just at that time. And Dronacharya said, no, there cannot be a battle because the sun has set. But that is the Kshatriya. It has to be heroic. If he cannot do heroic things, then no one has faith. Second quality is, he is heroic, and then he is powerful. He must be powerful. Kshatriya must be able to do extraordinary things. Prabhupada said the devotees in ISKCON should perform Herculean tasks. Have to do powerful things. That is Kshatriya. Not like ordinary person. Kshatriya is not ordinary people. They're very powerful. So they can do extra. And you see in the Mahabharata, the Ramayana, they did extraordinary activities, the Kshatriyas. Bhimasen, famous for doing extraordinary powerful activities. And once again, then everyone becomes inspired by them. You feel protected by them. Then the next quality is determination. Kshatriya is fixed. Determination. Right? When he goes onto the battlefield, he is determined, either I will win
or lose.
I will die. That's it. There is no compromise. But they're so determined. That is Kshatriya. He is fixed. This is my goal. I will attain that goal. Then, resourcefulness. Resourcefulness means a Kshatriya has so much, because if you are powerful, you have so much resource at your control, because you are able to bring things under control. And you see the Kshatriyas previously, that's what they did. When Yudhishthira, to establish himself as the king of the world, or the emperor of the world, he had to conquer all of the other kings. So at different times he performed different sacrifices. He did the Ashwamedha sacrifice, he did the Rajasuya sacrifice. So in order to do that, he had to have a great deal of resource. So he had to send the brothers, Arjuna, Bhima, Nakul, Sahadev, to the four directions to collect wealth from the other kings, subordinate them, conquer them, collect wealth from them, and then bring it back to Yudhishthira so he could perform the sacrifice. So this resource, or they have control of so much resource, shows their potency or power. You can say, I am the king. But if you don't have any resource, then where is your potency? So these Kshatriyas, they were resourceful. They had so much resource. Why? Because they were potent. They had power. Then, courage in battle. Kshatriyas are courageous. They're not scared. They will fight to the death. That is their courage. They will protect the citizens. They have virya, means like courage, like that. Otherwise, you don't find real Kshatriyas in Kali Yuga. One dog barks and we get scared. Or we just hear a loud noise and we're all like, like that. Kshatriyas, they do not feel like that. They're powerful. And then, generosity. They have so much wealth, but they don't keep the wealth for themselves. They don't think this is my wealth. They actually like to live simply. The father of the Pandavas, Pandu Maharaj, he conquered the whole earth, the whole of India, you can say. Pandu Maharaj, he became the emperor. He himself became the emperor. He traveled around, he conquered everyone. And then he came back to Hastinapur. But once he conquered everything, he then left Hastinapur under the control of the Brahmanas, and he went to the forest just to live a simple life. So actually, Kshatriyas are very simple. They just like to live a simple life. But they control the opulence of the kingdom, not for themselves, but for the benefit of the citizens. So they're very generous. That means no one will ever go hungry in their kingdom. The defect Prabhupada would criticize, the defect of the modern government, there's so many hungry people. Just like in the world these days, it is said that 1 in 8 people go to bed hungry every night. So there's 7 billion people, so it means nearly 1 billion people every night go to bed hungry. How is that possible? Because we don't have kshatriyas, because a kshatriya would not let that happen. He would organize it, so no one is hungry. So Prabhupada said that no one should go hungry 10 miles around the ISKCON temple. So Prabhupada's point is, if the government won't do it, then we will do it. Prabhupada was like a kshatriya because he was so resourceful, he had so much resource, he could feed hundreds of thousands of people. You know, what's the figure? I think in India, I think every day in India, ISKCON feeds 800,000 people. I think that's the figure. Something phenomenal. Or Priyavrata Prabhu, my godbrother, he's in charge of Food for Life in ISKCON. I heard him say the other day, I think he said, every second, ISKCON feeds 37 people around the world. Every second. I think that's the figure he gave. So that means in 60 seconds, what's that, 370 then times 6? Means every minute we must be feeding like 1,500 people, something like that. So then every hour, or there's like 15,000 multiplied by 6, so that's like 90,000 people every hour. So then if you go to 10 hours, that's 900,000 people. So I mean, we must be feeding 1.5 million people a day or something in ISKCON. I think that's the figure that he gave, something like that. So that's resourceful. And where does that resource come from? From Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was so resourceful, then if the government won't do it, we'll do it. So that is the kshatriya's position. There should not be any hungry people. That just means there's no kshatriya. And then, finally, the last quality Krishna gives in the Gita, he says, the kshatriya must have leadership. Ishwara bhav. He must be a leader. Control. Ishwara means controller. A kshatriya has to have control. If you're a kshatriya, people must be following you. If you say, I'm the leader, but no one's following you, then you're not a leader, are you? But kshatriya means people will follow him. He has control. People naturally follow him because they know this person. He knows where he's going, and he can take everyone in that direction. So they are the qualities of the kshatriya, which Krishna gives. Any points?
They were used to be so pious that if people had any trouble, like if the son is to die before the father or mother, then they used to go and complain to the father, to the king, that you are not pious, that's why I'm suffering. Even a brahmana complained to Lord Ram, because in his kingdom, I mean, I think his son died before. So they have to be ready for it.
Any other points?
You must do the other brahmana whose so many children were killed. Arjuna protected.
10th canto. It was in your dynasty that Hiranyaksha was born, carrying only his own club. He wandered the globe alone, without assistance. To conquer all directions, and no hero he met could rival him. So Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, they were very powerful. But unfortunately, they were impious. So because they were impious, they were killed by the Lord himself. So Kshatriya has to be pious. Kshatriyas are good people. When they become bad, they just cause problems. So Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, they were powerful, but they just cause problems. When delivering the earth from the Garbhodaka sea, Lord Vishnu, in his incarnation as a boar, killed Hiranyaksha, who had appeared before him. The fight was severe, and the Lord killed Hiranyaksha with great difficulty. Later, as the Lord thought about the uncommon prowess of Hiranyaksha, he felt himself victorious indeed. When Hiranyakashipu heard the news of his brothers being killed, with great anger he went to the residence of Vishnu, the killer of his brother, wanting to kill Lord Vishnu. Seeing Hiranyakashipu coming forward, bearing a trident in his hand like personified death, Lord Vishnu, the best of all mystics and the knower of the progress of time, thought as follows. Wheresoever I go, Hiranyakashipu will follow me, as death follows all living entities. Therefore it is better for me to enter the core of his heart. For then, because of his power to see only externally, he will not see me. Lord Vamanadeva continued, O king of the demons, after Lord Vishnu made this decision, he entered the body of his enemy, Hiranyakashipu, who was running after him with great force. In a subtle body inconceivable to Hiranyakashipu, Lord Vishnu, who was in great anxiety, entered Hiranyakashipu's nostril along with his breath. Janeshwara, I'll do that.
Supreme Personality of Godhead is already in the core of every heart. Ishvasarvo Bhutanam Hideyeshwara Shuna Tishtuti. Logically, therefore, it was not at all difficult for Lord Vishnu to enter Hiranyakashipu's body. The word Vigna Chetas Cheta, very anxious, is significant. It is not that Lord Vishnu was afraid of Hiranyakashipu. Rather, because of compassion, Lord Vishnu was in anxiety about how to act for his welfare.
So what are the points?
Any
other points?
The Lord is already there, so why he had to enter into the nostrils? He's already there as a witness.
Well, compassion.
No, it means it's like the external form entered into the that form which is there. Just like Krishna expands himself, and then those forms can enter back into that other form as well. So one form was outside and it entered back in, merged with the same form. Like that. Any other point? So, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out that he remains hidden from everyone, which means the Lord is within the heart. So therefore he cannot be perceived. But at the same time he maintains everyone. So that is his position, that he only desires the welfare of the living entities. So he's entered into the heart of Hiranyakashipu. He's unseen. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out that in this verse, Prabhupada also comments, the Lord is in anxiety. almost like he's out of fear of Hiranyakashipu. He's like hiding within his heart. But Prabhupada points out that the Lord, when he displays these negative qualities, it is just to churn rasa. It is not because the Lord is actually scared or these things. It's just, it's a way of him. Whenever he shows negative qualities in his pastimes, it is simply to make everyone enjoy more. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur lists five qualities. Well, the first quality he lists is lying. Sometimes Krishna lies. What are examples of when Krishna lies? Huh? Yeah, he steals the butter, but then he says, I did not do it. Yeah, he says, I did not do it. I wasn't even there. He says, I've not even been near the place. There's one pastime in Vrindavan, which is very sweet, where in Gokul, which is where Krishna appeared, in Gokul, across the river from Vrindavan, in Mahavan Sime on the other side. So over in Gokul, Krishna used to go and steal the butter. He's known as Makanchor. And then one elderly gopi, she was always telling Mother Yashoda, Krishna is always coming to steal. And the gopi would say, Mother Yashoda would say, no, Krishna would not do that. So she said, no, I tell you, he's doing it. So one day she runs in, she hears the noise. So she runs into the pantry and Krishna is there. So she gets him by the hand. She says, now I've got you. Krishna's very scared. So I'll take you to Mother Yashoda. So she's taking Krishna by the hand. So she goes, walks across to Mother Yashoda's palace. She walks in, she has Krishna by the hand. And she says to Mother Yashoda, she says, see? See? Now I have him. Now you can see. Now you can see, I have your boy. Mother Yashoda looks and said, what is that? And she looks down and it's her son. And she's confused. And she looks and then she looks back and she, like that. So she says to Mother Yashoda, says, what is the problem? She says, no. And she's bewildered. So she walks out, she walks around the corner, and she looks back and it's Krishna again. And Krishna says, and if you ever do that again, next time I'll turn into your husband. So this is an example of Krishna lying. But when Krishna does lying or something, it's just to increase rasa. Then Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, greed. When is Krishna greedy? Yeah, all the time Krishna is greedy. Like he cannot, he's known in Vrindavan, he cannot control his tongue. He always eats too many ladus. He's always stealing the yogurt, and he's always, Krishna is greedy. But when Krishna does it, the quality becomes a stimulation for rasa. And then Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, fear. So in Damodar Lila, Krishna is scared of Mother Yashoda. But this increases the pastime. Krishna is not scared on one level, but on another level he's totally frightened. But that increases the rasa of Vatsalya Bhav. And then lust. Krishna shows lust towards the gopis, but that is transcendental calm. It is not calm in this world, it is prem. It is love. So therefore, that increases, it appears to be lust, but actually it's prema. It increases the love of Krishna and the gopis. So when Krishna acts in, with conjugal feelings toward the gopis, it increases their love. So it increases the rasa. And then finally, anger. So what are examples of Krishna becoming angry?
Yeah,
with Maharaj Bhishma. And then Krishna became angry because Bhishma was defeating Arjuna. So Krishna became angry, picked up the chariot wheel, and he was ready to attack. Like that. So this increases the rasa. So Bhishma was feeling ecstasy. Bhishma put down his bow and he said, kill me now. And he said, this is my ecstasy. And so it increases the rasa. So if Krishna shows angry, because anger is a negative quality, but when Krishna shows it, increases pleasure. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out that when Krishna shows any negative quality, it simply increases the rasa in these pastimes. So it is perfect. Any points? Okay. Upon seeing that the residence of Lord Vishnu was vacant, Hiranyakashipu began searching for Lord Vishnu everywhere. Angry at not seeing him, Hiranyakashipu screamed loudly and searched the entire universe, including the surface of the earth, the higher planetary systems, all directions, and all the caves and oceans. But Hiranyakashipu, the great hero, did not see Vishnu anywhere. Unable to see him, Hiranyakashipu said, I have searched the entire universe, but I could not find Lord Vishnu, who has killed my brother. Therefore, he must certainly have gone to that place from which no one returns. In other words, he must now be dead. Sugandhi Prabhu, you want to read?
Atheists generally follow the Buddha philosophy, including that death, everything is finished. Hiranyakashipu, being an atheist, thought this way. Because Lord Vishnu was not visible to him, he thought that the Lord was dead. Even today, many people follow the philosophy of God, the philosophy that God is dead, but God is never dead. Even the living entity who is part of God never dies. Na jayate mriyate va kadachit. For the soul, there is never a birth or death. This is a statement of Bhagavad Gita 2.20. Even the ordinary living entities never take birth or die. What then is to be said of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the seed of all living entities? He certainly never takes birth or dies. Ajopi San Vyayatma, Bhagavad Gita 4.6. Both the Lord and the living entity exist as unborn, inexhaustible personalities. Thus, Hiranyakashipu's conclusion that Vishnu was there was wrong. As indicated by the word, Yato Nibrite Van. There is certainly a spiritual kingdom if the living entity goes there. He never returns to this material world. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 4.9. Tattva deham nar janma mukti maam ekti swarja. Materially speaking, every living entity dies. Death is inevitable. But those who are in the karmis, jnanis, and yogis return to the material world after death, whereas bhaktas do not. Of course, if a bhakta is not a completely perfect, he takes birth in the material world again, but in a very exalted position, either in the rich family or family of purest brahmana, suchinam simatam gete, just to finish his development of the spiritual consciousness. Those who have completed the course of Krishna consciousness and are free from the material desire, return to the goal of Supreme Personality Godhead. Yad gatva na nivrtante tad dhamam paramam mama. Here, the same fact is stated. Yato na vrtate kuman. Any person who goes back, home, back to Godhead,
so what are the points?
What is the meaning of completing the course of Krishna consciousness?
The second paragraph?
Yeah.
course we are now free from material. Yeah, it means that you followed your sadhana and then you become purified. Any other points?
Bhagavad Gita has been completely established here, where the soul has got no birth or death. And we are on a qualitative level.
Yeah, so it's being said here that Prabhupada is attacking atheistic doctrine, Nirvisesha Shunyavad. Prabhupada always attacks the atheists. Harisori Prabhu was Prabhupada's personal servant for 15 months. Every day he was with Prabhupada for 15 months. And he said there was not one day that went past where Prabhupada did not attack the Mayavadis and the scientists and the atheists. So Prabhupada's always attacking. This is no God, or God is dead. So what is that? It's atheism. So Prabhupada would always attack these non-theistic arguments. In the second paragraph, Srila Prabhupada says that if we want to go back to the spiritual world, we have to become free from material desire. So that's a lot of work. Not easy to become free from material desire. But if we want to go back to Godhead, we have to become free. So it requires practice, takes time. And we should always see, as Krishna consciousness goes on year after year after year, we have to see that our material desires are becoming less. If they're becoming more, it means we're not following the process. If you follow the process, your material desires should be weakening in due course of time. So, any other points?
Come
back to ISKCON. Join the Gurukul. It's not so bad for us. Because we get to come to ISKCON again, so it's not so bad. Better if we go back to Krishna. If we don't make it, we come back to ISKCON. So it's not bad, but better we go back to Krishna. Anything else?
Doesn't it depend on Krishna? If we think that this person is sincere, but he has not completed, he can forgive
him. Yeah, Krishna can do whatever he wants.
He can make complete.
Yeah. Ultimately, it's Krishna who will. Prabhupada said, if we're 70% pure, then Lord Chaitanya will take us back. So.
I heard Guru Jan Prabhu saying that you can only desire and work hard. But
yeah, of course, it's up to Krishna. But you have to do something, that's the point.
Yeah, you have to depend. Ultimately, you have to depend.
You can't just watch television and boxing and whatever all those people do. You have to be sincere.
That's right.
Any other point?
Okay. What if we hear few people souls would like to come back to the material world just for the sake of service to Krishna, or for some other or higher purpose?
A pure devotee doesn't have any desire. So a pure devotee doesn't even desire to go back to Godhead. Pure devotee just thinks, if Krishna wants to send me back, I'll come back. If Krishna wants me to go home, I'll go home. So it's up to them. Ahoituki apratihata. Ahoituki means no motivation. So you just like Krishna, whatever he wants to do. Any other points?
Even if a devotee doesn't finish, and then he can take birth in family of devotees, or he can come back to his con. But then I think there's a big risk there, because of the fact that you're born with it, you might take it for granted. That's one thing, because we haven't realized in this life, we haven't found it, we've just been given it because of the past, you know, lives. That's one thing. And the other thing is that a lot of children that you see are devoted children, and they're born eating prasadam, and, you know, they're just in very, very strong Krishna conscious families, but then they fall away, they just leave it all, which means that because of the pious smriti or because of pious devotional life, they do take birth in devotee families and Krishna gives them the full chance to continue on, but then because of the comfortable situation that they're put into, they are in good opulent families and devotionally very strong situation, yet they just give it up. So I think it's a very big risk to even think that we should come back to it.
Yeah, it's a big risk. So get serious.
But then
when are you going to get serious?
I'm trying to.
Okay, so.
But then they depend 100% on Krishna. If he wants me to go and preach, I'll go.
Yeah, that's the most event. The most event. No. If someone's advanced, then they don't have any desire. If Krishna sends them back, they say, no problem, they're coming back to preach. But many of us are not on that level. We should just try to go back to the spiritual world. But so it doesn't really matter for devotees. Krishna will take care of us. Because we're surrendering to Krishna. Even if we don't make it, we'll come back to ISKCON. It's not a problem. Yeah, there's a risk involved, but we're sincere. So. Anything else? Okay. Srila Prabhupada Ki. So tomorrow we'll continue with Chapter 19.